Well, let's get going right now because you have something very interesting to talk about. I did speak about your practice, 215-PREVENT, or online, 215prevent.com. Dr. Mark Rabinowitz, Southampton-based Prevention First Healthcare. Now, we've said that 100 million times. So we're gearing up for the holidays now. This is what we're going to talk about today. We just got through Halloween and so on. And dieting has begun, if it ever ends for some of us. And there's so many diets out there. So can dieting be good for you or not be good for you?
You know, diet's interesting. Sometimes I'll be in the hospital and the nurse will say, oh, can the patient have a diet? I said, no, the patient has a normal body weight. You can give them regular food, you know, making a joke about it.
Right.
So, you know, what we use in I guess, modern language or vernacular is a diet to lose weight. But really, a diet is what are you consuming? The problem is that most Americans eat a high-fat, high-caloric diet.
Mm-hmm.
So the number one cause of death in the United States is stroke and heart attack, which can be directly related to our diet. And having a proper diet is sort of an interesting topic because I continue to go to seminars and meetings with national experts on this. And one thing I've learned from going to conferences and from clinical practice is that everybody has to be individualized. Every one of us has a metabolism that's different. And I've heard comedians talk about this, where they'll say, well, you know, a person that's heavy looks at the person that is thin and said, well, I bet you can just eat anything you want and you'll never get fat, and I just look at food and get fat.
Mm-hmm.
And in some respects, there may be some truth in that some people may have a very slow metabolism. But when you look at large populations, and this is studied a great deal, one thing that holds true is that something called a Mediterranean diet, and this is just one example of a diet that has been proven to reduce the risk of stroke, heart attack, and death by almost 30%. And what it does is it follows a diet that people in Europe, that in Greece and Crete, in Spain, and what they do, excuse me one second, my phone was just going off.
Mm-hmm.
What they eat is a diet that's very heavy in fish. It's very heavy in plant-based foods. And you also hear the word legumes. And I actually once heard a comedian talk about that. Well, I went into the store and I asked for legumes and I couldn't find any. Well, that was pretty funny, actually.
How about a bean or a pea?
So what a legume is, so I'm now going to educate everybody. A legume is a plant in the pea family, and it's a plant that produces pods that split open naturally along the seam to reveal a row of seeds, which can be peas, it can be lentils, it can be chickpeas, beans, it can be edamame, and who cares? So you eat a diet that's high in beans. But what it does, what eating the Mediterranean type diet is, that's very high in olive oil. It uses olive oil as the mainstay in fat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, olive oil itself has calories, and it is a fat, but it's what's called a monounsaturated fat.
Mm-hmm.
It's not highly saturated, and you still only need a small amount of this to cook with. But when people use this as their primary primary substance as opposed to butter, what they find is it reduces the risk primarily of stroke, but it reduces the risk of a first heart attack by 30%. So it's very, very significant. And it's not hard. I tell people when you shop in the market, stick to the outsides of the market.
Mm-hmm.
And things that don't come in packages, for the most part, are pretty healthy for you. So
yes,
if it's in the vegetable aisle, the fruit aisle, if it's colored, and the mechanism by which this works is that we believe it's stopping inflammation. It stops something called free radicals from damaging, which are negatively charged particles that the body not only produces naturally as a way of breaking substances down, but we can get them in the forms of smoking, in the forms of eating fatty foods, fried foods, greasy foods, red meat, and it binds these negatively charged particles, and it sticks to them, and then they're excreted in the urine. And that's one of the mechanisms that we think this works.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not hard to eat fish. Certain Most fish is high in what are called omega-3 fatty acids.
Yes.
And once again, what it does, it protects the lining of the blood vessel. And in my own practice, what I do is I sit with people and I show them pictures of blood vessels and what the lining looks like. And I show them what a healthy vessel looks like and a vessel that's filled with plaque and how you actually get there. And how by eating a diet of the right substances is basically like taking medicine, if you want to look at it that way, and you can repair damage.
Mm-hmm. Now, where is the genetic factor here?
Well, that's interesting. There are people that have longevity where they will tell you mom, dad, aunts, and uncles all lived into their mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
We're at a point where, you know, now the human genome has been coded.
Mm-hmm.
So doctors and scientists have an understanding of what these genes are doing. But once again, I think we're still in the very early phases of that. There are people that come to me that have a family history of early heart disease. And one of the mm-hmm. tests that's used is with something called a cardiac CAT scan. So you can take a low-dose CAT scan and actually see if you're developing calcium deposits
mm-hmm.
on the coronary arteries. And this has been written about widely. It's not done probably as much as it should be, but it's written about a great deal. And I have people that will start out, because of family history, with a calcium score of zero. There's no identifiable plaque. But if these people are non-compliant with their diet, and unfortunately not everybody is, and then you redo it years later, you can show that they've developed plaque in their heart at that time. And then what happens is if they actually get with the program and do what you ask them to do, combined with medications, you can reverse that.
Oh, it is reversible. Okay. Now, here's what I wanted to ask you also. What about the calories in, calories out theory? I understand the Mediterranean diet, and I kind of was raised on a Mediterranean diet. But now, you know, we ruin it by desserts and sugars and all kinds of junk. But what about the calories in, calories out theory? So many people say, oh, it doesn't matter what you eat. It's the number of calories you eat. In other words, could I eat 5 pieces of pie a day and still be thin? I don't think so.
Probably not.
No.
It's interesting. In the Mediterranean diet, because it's reasonably low in dairy, it's pretty much devoid of red meat, that's a calorie unrestricted diet. Nobody put a limit on how many calories these people could eat. And they all lost weight.
Well, what about lamb, though? They use a lot of lamb in
well,
middle...
Well, lamb's only true, but lamb's still meat. They'll allow that once a week, twice a week sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you know...
Pork is only meat. Well, they've done longevity studies looking at cultures where people live over 100. The people that usually make that are vegan, and people that come in right behind them maybe have pork once a week.
Oh.
But calories in, calories out, you're absolutely right. There are people, believe it or not, that metabolize foods very slowly,
mm-hmm.
Genetically. And it sort of can be tested for. It's a little bit cumbersome to do it. But these are people that will tell you that they don't eat that much and they keep gaining weight.
Mm-hmm.
The key to people like that is they may need to be kept on a diet of maybe only 1,500 or 1,400 calories a day
mm-hmm.
and a very high protein, you know, very low fat, low carbohydrate diet. But if you eat 5 pieces of cake a day,
mm-hmm.
Even people that are young and thin and athletic, and even if they're burning it up, if they keep doing that, eventually they're going to start to see pounds come on.
Oh, that's too bad.
Sorry.
Sorry, let's see. Okay, what about butter?
You know, it's interesting. Time Magazine had a recent article was on the front page, Butter is Good for You Again.
Mm-hmm.
And they began looking at different spreads. In the Mediterranean diet, they don't use butter. They use olive oil. Much the same way if you go into an Italian restaurant,
mm-hmm.
often they won't put butter on the plate. They will just bring a jar of olive oil. Which is obviously much healthier for you. But they're beginning to swing back. And much the same way they thought eggs years ago were always bad for you, now they're figuring that eggs in moderation are not that bad for you, that there's a lot of protein in eggs. Yes, there's a lot of cholesterol. But to have eggs once or twice a week probably is not unhealthy. And probably the same thing with butter. I also think the amounts matter. I mean, if somebody takes a very thin, serving and just puts it on for some taste and deliciousness and flavor, that's probably okay. I think somebody that cakes it on and adds layer to layer is going to put calories on and damage their circulation ultimately.
I wonder if the olive oil offsets... I think there's a genetic component here, because I can tell you that my own mother, who cooked in a Mediterranean way, she would eat butter right off the stick. You know what I mean? She'd take a pat of butter and she would eat it. She ate chicken skin. She had low cholesterol.
I agree with you. We all have anecdotes. Yeah. I had grandparents that came from Russia that ate chicken fat on bread into their 90s. Now, they ultimately died of heart disease, and maybe had they not have done that, they could have been in the hundreds. But they're looking at scientists are looking at populations.
Yeah.
They're looking at tens and 20 and 30,000, hundreds of thousands of people, cultures, and how do you basically get people to live a longer, healthier life? And that's what we do in our office, is we sit with people. And, you know, you also have to individualize things. You have to ask people, what are their tastes? What are their habits?
Right.
What do they eat after dinner at night? You know, what are they exactly doing? And then what we do is we come up with behavioral changes. And, you know, it's interesting. We talked about preventative medicine and other shows. Right. People will go to a doctor and maybe go once a year. And now there's prevention codes that doctors can actually bill for. But basically, if you tell the patient diet, exercise, lose weight, boom, you check that off. You did your job. Well, that's just not cutting it. It certainly isn't cutting it in America, where we have the highest mortality in the industrialized world.
Mm-hmm.
And we come in 34th, according to the World Health Organization, which is dead last, tied with Serbia. But when you sit with individual people, and if people go on my website, one of my patients was kind enough to do a television show with me where we didn't use medicine, we didn't use popular diet trends, or I don't want to mention names, but we basically sat. And I said to him, John, what do you eat? And he told me, Mark, this is what I eat. And I said, well, okay, here's the problem. And he was honest with me, and we needed to make tweaks over time. And within a couple of years, he was down 70 pounds. Let me tell people something else. When you lose that much weight, and you can talk to people that have done it, guess what they're not taking anymore? Blood pressure medicines, for the most part. Diabetic medications. These are people that may have had sleep apnea that's now been no longer a clinical problem requiring a mask. They're saving thousands and thousands of dollars a year in medicine. They're prolonging their life, and they're living healthier. But in our current medical system, where a patient gets 6 to 10 minutes with the doctor, and I always use the analogy of the car, try that one on your mechanic. Take your car in and say, fix it in 6 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And give it back to me in 10 minutes. It's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible to prepare a gourmet main meal in 6 to 10 minutes. And it's not possible to save a life in 6 to 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. What about the fish thing? We all love fish, but you should eat more fish, I think, don't you think?
Well, yeah, once again, I always go back to studies, that if a man eats, and this is probably true for women as well, but if a man eats one piece of salmon a week, they think that may add 4 to 5 years of life, significantly cuts down heart attacks and strokes. Cold water fish is particularly good, salmon.
What about women? Don't they test it on women?
Oh, no, absolutely. It just depends how the studies were done. There was actually one study, I have to diverge, looking at water drinking, and that in men that drank 6 to 8 glasses of water a day reduced the risk of a first heart attack by 30%. They can't really figure out why that is, unless they're also restricting their caloric intake, and they assume the same would be true for women.
Mm-hmm.
What they are finding out is that women and men are different, that women are just as likely to get heart attacks as men are, but their symptoms are different, so doctors really need to pay attention that a woman may not complain of chest pain, but she may be fatigued, she may be short of breath, she may have a twinge, she may describe pain differently. But clearly, eating a diet that's rich in fish, very high in beans, and fruits, and vegetables, does certainly prevents stroke, clearly prevents cardiovascular death from stroke and heart attack. It keeps people's blood vessels healthier, and that's sort of the name of the game.
Well, you know, I want to say this. One of the things about the Mediterranean diet, like you were saying, well, I'll put it this way. If I described a Mediterranean diet to someone, I would say the meat is the smaller portion of the meal. Is that correct?
Well, in portion control is certainly important because no matter what you're eating, there's calories. But in the study that was done, they did not restrict how much food someone could eat. They were counseled. But they didn't restrict the number of calories people were eating.
No.
It was the quality. But I do agree with you. I mean, you know, you can eat too much olive oil. I mean, if you pour olive oil on, that has a lot of calories to it.
Sure it does.
So you have to have be somewhat judicious in how you're doing it. But once again, one of the things we do is people that come to my office, I sit with them with models of food, of what does a portion size look like? What should be on your plate? What can you eat unlimited amounts of,
right.
What do you need to restrict? But I'm learning all the time. I continue to learn. I go to conferences, and I continue to teach. And that's sort of what the advantage of coming to a prevention-based practice is.
Right.
That's what that small extra fee is for. It's for that amount of time, that amount of follow-up. That we can give people to help save their life.
So, you see success with the Mediterranean diet.
Success.
Yeah.
We see huge success. You know, we talked about it in other shows.
Yeah.
And some people that tell you, doctor, I'm trying everything. And I said, well, in those people, and some people are looking at gastric bypass, which does save lives, there's no doubt. But that's still a somewhat risky thing to do. That's
it
not
is.
Without risk.
Yeah.
Still major abdominal surgery. You know, there are medicines that can be used. When I tell people, I don't want you to take this forever. I want you to take it until we can alter your habits. Sometimes it means working with nutritionists and dietitians, based on preferences, but it's really can be a team approach. But if people are really dedicated to prolonging their life and their health, there's so much that we can do, but they have to come in.
You know, it's interesting that you keep dwelling on that. So many times when we, you know, Nutrisystem and Jenny Craig and all of these other diets, they focus on how the people look. You know, you're going to look like $1 million. You're going to look like you were 25 years old again. But the thing, it's really all about health and longevity. Is that correct? That's it.
One of the things that's interesting with behavior modification, if you get people to change your behavior and they look better, there's a reward to that. They look in the mirror and they're wearing smaller waist-sized pants. Their clothes fit better. They're able to do more exercise.
Yes.
They feel it. They can see it.
Yeah.
And that's what those, and by the way, those diets work. One of my physician friends, a cardiologist, who's a type 2 diabetic, you know, not someone taking insulin, couldn't get his sugars under control. And he's a very, very bright guy from, you know, a big Ivy League background. And he said, well, let me give that a try. And what he learned was that it was portion control.
Yeah.
So that he was eating, able to eat carbs, but the portion of carbs they gave him was very small. And I've been into a large supermarket chain with my wife recently, and what I saw was that in the bread section, because people do love bread, they actually came out with portion sizes that are similar to what you see when you're in Europe or in Canada, very small croissants, very small muffins. But it's self-controlled, because if you buy
that's
it,
not the American way.
It's not the American way. Well, I mean, if you look at some famous restaurants, go to a place like, and this just isn't me, but I think it was either Cheesecake Factory or... what was the other one?
God help us.
It was a large chain of a Chinese restaurant. We voted the unhealthiest restaurants in America. Well, if you look at the portion sizes, they're enormous.
I know.
So Americans like to eat. And the other thing is, you know, God forbid you went to a restaurant and they didn't give you enough food. You walk out and you say, oh, that was a horrible restaurant. Look, they gave me nothing to eat. And yet in
That's
Europe,
right.
I think what's become popular is tapas style, where they give you small amounts that are to be shared.
Yes, that's very good. That's excellent. So, bottom line here, what do you think about which is the worst offender, if there is one? Is sugar, or like so many people, like I know personally, I can lose weight if I knock off the carbs, but the breads and the pastas and that sort of thing. But isn't sugar really the worst thing all around?
Sure. Let me tell you what happens with sugar.
Yeah.
And when I say sugar, I just don't mean refined table sugar.
Yeah.
I mean white bread and pretzels. pasta. Although pasta is seminal, so it's a little bit different. It's metabolized.
Mm-hmm.
It's broken down a little bit more slowly.
Yeah.
So what happens is, let's say you take that white bread and you eat it. It now makes it into your stomach, and the acid breaks it up, and it's broken up into little pieces of sugar, just tiny little sugar molecules,
mm-hmm.
just like you were drinking table sugar. Now it gets into absorbed into your bloodstream. And what it does, it binds to receptors on the lining of your blood vessels,
mm-hmm.
and it begins to create nicks. It literally breaks them. So how does the body fix the break? The body takes bad cholesterol out of the bloodstream, LDL
Ooh.
Cholesterol,
yeah.
and it takes white blood cells, and it creates something called plaque. Plaque is like rust, and it's a patch internally. Well, you keep doing that, that patch grows and grows, and two things happen. One, it just occludes the blood vessel, and if that's in your brain, we call it a stroke.
Uh-huh.
It's in your heart, you call it a heart attack. If it's in the kidney, you call it kidney failure. Or the plaque can break open and the clot can form, and you still end up with the same result, a stroke, a heart attack, or a blocked artery, or you lose your leg. And
Yikes.
That's from eating a little bit of white bread and a little bit of sugar. But what I find with my patients is that I take care of very, very smart, very accomplished people. I take care of many, many physicians and dentists and their families.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? Nobody knows everything. And when you
mm-hmm.
say you educate people and you teach them, this is what I want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to tell people, don't eat this or don't eat that, but you need to give them something to eat. What am I supposed to eat? How much am I supposed to eat? It makes
mm-hmm.
a big difference.
So, as far as the sugar is concerned, then you just lumped it all together with the you know, there was a book a long time ago, Sugar Blues, and, ages and ages ago, Gloria Swanson, I mean, I don't know when she was popular, they just said to not eat anything white, and that would take into white bread and white sugar, the refined things, correct?
Correct.
Now, what about honey?
Honey is a natural sweetener. Honey has enormous physiological benefits to the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, once again, in small quantities.
Small quantities.
Mm-hmm. There are natural, there's something called stevia or truvia that are natural sweeteners.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I found, too, I loved coffee. I drink a lot of coffee. And for the last couple of years, coffee has been shown to reduce stroke. Now, this is not for everybody. It's not for people with heart conditions or irregular heartbeats. And what I've done is I've switched it from, refined table sugar over to stevia or truvia, and I reduce the quantity. I just constantly try and just get a little bit to make it, give it some sweetness, but not enough to poison me.
All right, well, that's great. Now, so what do you think? The Mediterranean diet is a way to go, but how are we going to know about this? I think your practice, the kind of practice that you have, is special and unique, and I think that people should give you a call at 215-PREVENT, right? 215-PREVENT, or online.
Right, at 215-PREVENT.com. And what we do is we bring people in for half an hour, and I shut up and let them talk, and they tell me what's bothering them and what their problems have been and, why they can't get better and what their needs are. The interesting thing about our practice is we really personalize it. So that, remember, two-thirds of the people that will come to me or any doctor are overweight or obese.
Yeah.
So pretty much everybody, not everybody, but pretty much everybody, two-thirds, need some counseling into what they're doing and some open
mm-hmm.
discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And we provide the time for that and the follow-up for that.
And how about insurance? How does that work with you?
We participate. We take everybody's insurance, take Medicare. But for preventative services that are not covered, particularly all of the follow-ups that have to be done, not everything is covered by insurance or Medicare. They're not all, insurance and Medicare is not all inclusive. They're good. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But there's things that they don't cover, and that's where the extra fee comes in.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's terrific, absolutely terrific, Dr. Mark Rabinowitz. And we're going to keep in touch with you. And I think this is a fascinating thing because this is all related to health and longevity, and that's what people want. They want to live a long time, and they want to be healthy in their old age.
Star Trek, live long and prosper.
There you go. Thank you so much.
If you're not living long.
Thank you so much, and I'll repeat your numbers again when you're off. Thank you very much, Dr.
Thanks,
Rabinowitz.
Matt.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye. He's terrific.